Hello, I'm Kira Ozer. I'm a psychic, hypnotherapist, and tarot card reader. Thanks for joining me today in this conversation about how to read tarot cards. Today I'll be talking about the process, covering some questions you may have, and I'll leave you with some tips that have helped me over the years. These suggestions will work with most tarot decks, but I personally most often use decks based on the Rider-Waite or Smith-Waite cards. Part 1, how to prepare. I think of the cards as storytellers, but the stories are about our real lives in the past, present, and future. Some believe the cards may be guided by incorporeal forces such as spirits or ancestors. Whatever your beliefs may be about the communicative abilities of tarot cards or psychic channelers, both serve a unique function for our society and in our personal lives. I always meditate or use self-hypnosis before I begin. My state of mind is crucial to the success of the reading process. This might mean focus for you, which could be focusing on holding a rock in one of your hands or focusing on the image of a flower. It might mean prayer. I like to set an intention to, first of all, set aside my ego and biases so I can read more clearly and help the person I'm reading as much as possible, and I also like to ask that the reading may be for the highest good of everyone concerned. I personally like to use self-hypnosis to travel to a deeper level of the unconscious mind, the place we go in dreams, and where I find I can pick up more specific information. The hypnotic part of my reading process is perhaps a topic for another time because it's not something you can learn overnight. For now, I'll give you one suggestion. Since relaxation leads to concentration, which ultimately ends up in inspiration, do what helps you feel relaxed, whether that's stretching, closing your eyes, breathing more slowly, or repeating a word over and over in your mind, such as calm or peace. That's the only first step, and just one of many techniques of instigating self-hypnosis. But if you want to read more, I've posted some free tips on self-hypnosis exercises to get you started at kiraozer.com. That's kyraozer.com. Next, I shuffle until I don't feel like shuffling anymore. The energy will change when it's time to stop, and you'll feel it if you're attuned to that. If you need an amount of times to shuffle, you can try thinking of one of your favorite prayers while you shuffle. When the prayer is done, the shuffling is complete. Part 2, how to read. For the purposes of this introduction to reading, let's say we're choosing only one card. Turn over the card on top of the deck after you finish shuffling and interpret the image, letting free association and feelings guide you. I like to set aside my logical, rational mind during readings. There's a time and place for critical thinking, and that side of my brain is a very important part of my life, particularly my academic life, but analytical thinking has never helped me to channel or interpret the cards. When I've used it to connect the images in the cards to the situations of the person I'm reading, it simply doesn't work for me. So I stay with my intuitive mind. Once you begin working with more than one card, this is where the storytelling aspect intensifies. If you're an avid writer or reader, in this case I mean a reader of books, if you like to do puzzles or solve mysteries, or if you're a highly creative person, interpreting a group of cards will probably come naturally to you once you've learned the meaning of each card. Knowledge of the cards is not going to force you to use your logical mind. Like a painter who needs to know basic tools such as perspective, proportion, and the color wheel, you'll need to memorize the meaning of each card to be able to conduct a reading. The more you practice reading, the more quickly you'll be able to recognize the symbols and situations that each card is trying to communicate to you. Some readings will only need one card to find an answer. With more complex questions, or in general readings such as a Celtic cross spread, I find it exciting to connect more than one card into the reading because the story incorporates more people and sometimes even subplots. If I could relate one card readings to multiple card readings in a way that connects to sound or music, reading one card is like hearing one instrument or voice, and the spread of a card reading, where there are multiple cards, sounds more like a symphony to me. A cinematic analogy is that one card readings feel like watching a short film or clip versus the card spread of an epic drama, or in some cases comedy, depending on who and what shows up in the cards. Part 3, your questions. Question 1. Should I use a querent card? Well, if you do, that card won't have a chance to come up but you can set it aside. A querent card basically represents the person who you're reading for. So if that person seems like a Page of Cups, you'll set aside the Page of Cups and put that at the center of the reading, therefore setting the intention that the reading is about the Page of Cups. I've seen it used a lot in Celtic cross readings. So while it sets an intention, you don't have to use a querent card because sometimes that card will come up to describe your part or the part of the person you're reading in the situation anyway, based on the position it shows up in during the reading. So I find it's enough to just set an intention within my mind that the reading is about the person who I am talking to or who's sitting across from me as I'm conducting the reading. Question 2. Since some cards may come up reversed, are the cards read based on where the reader or the querent is sitting? Well, the reader is you if you're reading and interpreting the tarot cards. The querent is the person who's being read for, so it's based on where the reader's sitting, because this is the primary person who's going to be interpreting the cards. Question 3. Okay, speaking of this brings us up to the next question. Should I read reverse cards? Some people don't read cards in reverse. They only read them upright, meaning not upside down. A reverse card is showing up upside down after you've shuffled them. I read the reverse cards. In a deck of 78, then you're going to get 156 possible meanings. That's going to give you a larger language from which to communicate the messages in the cards. So I like to use those. You stand a chance, I think, of having a deeper and more detailed reading if you're willing to use reverse cards. But if you're just beginning to learn, it's okay to start with the upright meanings. Next question, question 4. I've heard that fasting helps some people to read. Is that true? Well, everyone's process is different. We all have various biological needs. Do what's best for your health and whatever your physician recommends for you. In my case, if I don't eat before a reading, I'm going to be distracted and I might get a headache. So I always make sure I'm pretty well fed before I give a reading. So just bring on the buffet before you get out the deck for me. That's how I like it. But I have a stellium in Sagittarius, so I can be a little bit gluttonous. Okay, everybody's different. As a reader is part of the point of what I'm saying, so do what works for you. And our final question, question 5. Can I be a tarot reader if I'm not a psychic? I believe anyone can learn to be a psychic, although the type and level of ability is going to vary. It's like any talent. Some are going to be born as more capable athletes or writers than others, but practice improves your ability no matter where you start. This reminds me of the story of the tortoise and the hare. Maybe you've heard it before. The rabbit was born faster than the turtle, which makes the hare more likely to win a race, but the rabbit's so confident in its abilities that it decides to take a nap. So while the turtle's slow, it's persistent and doesn't give up. And in the end, of course, the turtle wins the race. The moral of the story is just keep learning no matter where you began. And as long as you keep investing time into what you're interested in and excited about, you will go further and you'll excel more than you might expect. In any case, if you don't consider yourself to be a psychic or if channeling is not your particular interest in the supernatural realm, that's all the more reason to learn the cards because you're going to be relying more heavily on them in your tarot readings. Part 4, stories and closing thoughts. Speaking of storytelling, I'm going to give you an example of a card reading I did many years ago to illustrate the potential power of finding a process that works for you. I almost always start my readings with channeling before I go to the cards, so I don't limit my visions. There's no right or wrong way. This is what I find works best for me and gets the best outcome in my case. I find that adding the cards in after an initial meditation or psychic channeling session is most effective for me. A woman came in to see me at a psychic bookstore where I was giving readings many years ago, and after the initial channeling session that I did for her, she asked what she should do in her future career. All I could see was a blank canvas, a dark space of nothingness. Normally, I can see an object, a map, words written on a chalkboard, or a scene that plays out as if previewed from some future film. I kept trying, but all I could see was the blank canvas, and neither of us could understand it. I finally asked if she'd like me to check the cards, and upon shuffling, I turned over the Queen of Cups and the High Priestess. By putting the meaning of those cards together, I could see that she was meant to be a teacher in the arts, but to do this in a way that would still honor her own spiritual beliefs while she could still express her personal creativity. She revealed that she is a visual artist who used to teach women and children, and that's how she supported herself while pursuing a Bachelor of Arts in painting and drawing. But she hadn't painted or drawn in years. The cards revealed a latent dream, and my vision then made sense to both of us. As it turns out, the cards had a message that, when added onto the channeling, also gave her a visual validation for her dreams. The cards are like bringing a second person into the room to help the person being read, someone who might add additional guidance. The cards quickly gave me the missing piece of information that I couldn't see on my own. And again, while that stellium in Sagittarius will naturally encourage me to be independent, and it's good to know yourself as a reader, we're all different, the truth is that our minds are limited, and it's okay to ask for help. We are not omniscient. We don't know everything. So asking for help might mean referring a client to another reader if their situation is outside the scope of your experience or expertise, or it might mean asking the cards for their opinion or additional information. I also find that the cards are very helpful for asking yes-no questions. What I learned from this experience with the woman who later became an art teacher is to be more flexible. For some people, the cards may have a more profound or extensive message than what I can procure from a channeling session. For others, there might be more messages that come through channeling or mediumship than the cards. Every person who comes in for a reading is different, and we're all unique. No one else has your particular perspective or life experiences, and the same is true for anyone you're reading. So if you use multiple modalities, whether that's psychic channeling, runestones, tea leaves, astrology, or some other spiritual tool, let each session take its course as it will, and follow your feelings about when and how much to incorporate the cards. Every person you read for is a relationship, and every relationship is different. And finally, I'd like to leave you with a few last tips, which you're more than welcome to incorporate into your own readings. First, take risks. There's one area where I have regrets as a reader, and that's not speaking up when I received specific information. There are many reasons why we might not speak up while reading the cards. Fear of how someone will take the news, fear of being wrong, and, as was sometimes the case for me, the information I was getting was so bizarre that I doubted myself. I would say you don't need to second guess yourself. Just say it as you see it. Let the person being read respond, as they might have the missing pieces that make sense of your vision or feeling. If they don't, you don't have to worry about it. That information often makes sense to them in the future, whether through someone who can confirm it in their family or based on an event that hasn't taken place by the time of the reading. I've had clients email me years later to tell me that the mysterious King of Pentacles I described was someone they met after they broke up with an ex. Or the career path I predicted about them owning a magazine someday didn't make sense at the time that they were working as a personal trainer at the gym, but life took an unexpected course and they ended up exactly where the card said they would be. By the way, if you don't take a risk and find out you had information but didn't share it, you don't have to beat yourself up. I don't do that anymore. Not to worry, that action can be amended. I actively make amends to myself for those regrets and for regrets in life in general by taking more risks today and in the future. Next, forget about how you're being perceived. Your self-awareness as a reader can block messages and prevent you from doing your best work. For the duration of the reading, try to set aside any thoughts of how this is making you look, what other people might think of what you're saying, and what the outcome of your interpretation might later be. Any thoughts of yourself will create an impediment in the reading. I found this to be challenging once I started doing readings on the radio and particularly on television, but the outcome was always the same. If I was self-conscious, the reading would become blocked and I wouldn't get any information. Fortunately, I knew this was happening when it was happening, so I would shift my perspective away from myself and back onto the person I was reading. And at that moment and thereafter, everything changed. As long as I could forget what I looked like, how I sounded, and what other people thought of me, the reading flowed well, everything worked, and the pressure was off because I wasn't there to be seen. Helping is an excellent way to relieve stress, not just in readings but in life in general, because the situation's no longer about you, and therefore you don't have to worry about what the personal outcome might be, which also frees you to tell the truth as you see it, well, preferably with kindness, of course. And finally, remember that you're only there to serve. Being a reader is a form of spiritual counseling, and as such, this is a service-oriented task. Whether you're reading someone's cards professionally or recreationally, you're taking on a responsibility to be honest without being hurtful and to help that person without causing any harm. Overall, if you're someone who likes to help people, and if you have any interest in spirituality, psychology, or the supernatural, you already have many valuable qualities that will contribute to your journey to either becoming a tarot card reader or deepening and improving your supernatural and spiritual skills. I am wishing you many happy and fulfilling readings in the future. May we all help each other with the help of the cards as we travel this beautiful journey of life together. For more on learning tarot, please find more details about the Sun Sign School at jessicaadams.com, jessicaadams.com.